All right, so for our next presentation, we have Timothy Gibbs, who has been the Executive Director of the Delaware Academy of Medicine and Delaware Public Health Association since 2007. He holds a master's degree in public health, nonprofit management certification, and Lean Six Sigma certification. Tim is on the boards of the Delaware Stroke Initiative, Delaware Community Foundation, and Mid-Atlantic Arthritis Foundation. He directed a technological firm for 10 years prior to joining the Academy and DPHA in 2001 as their CIO. And I'd like to mention the reason we also invited Timothy to speak today, and we're very appreciative of him coming, is that we wanted an example of an affiliate, a public health association, that's been using some social media platforms and looking at different ways to engage both the public and elected officials. So this was an excellent example, especially as I know there are other affiliates out there that also have long-standing experience. And so sometimes it can be intimidating recognizing that, okay, well, they have their well-oiled machine. How do I get mine up and moving and up and going? And Delaware has been able to really mobilize in a short period of time. And so I think Timothy will be able to share a lot of really good examples and lessons learned and tips for how to do this for other people. And I'll turn it over to Tim.
Good morning, or yes, it's still morning. I don't do well tethered in back of a podium like this, but we're going to give it a go. So while this is obviously not a picture of me, because at my age it was black and white, it does represent my first experience with advocacy. And there's going to be a theme going through the presentation that involves waterfowl, which I love from afar. But here is the setup. So we were up in the Pocono Mountains, and there was this lovely little dock at a lake, and there were some ducklings in the water. And me being a young child, not knowing that if you got too close to the little ones, the parent would come after you with a vengeance, I did just that. I have vivid, trauma-informed memories of being chased around by that damn bird. And my parents, of course, laughed hysterically. The side note is, about 15 years ago, I was at a local botanical gardens where they have peacocks. I was now well into my late 40s. And a friend I was with said, Tim, she knew this story, she said, Tim, you don't want to turn around right now. And I heard this rattling noise. It was a peacock in back of me, and full fan. And literally, so the advocacy part is that swan, goose, whatever, really drove the point home to me, and I have remembered across the arc of my lifetime that she or he is going to protect their young ones. So it's a way to think about advocacy. What strong message do we get out there that's really going to resonate with people? So I'm following excellent presentations, and that's daunting. One of the first things I wanted to say, though, is as amazing as social media is, our cell phones and our iPads and our droids and lions and tigers, and my, you know, it's still our connection, our looking at each other, our picking up the phone and talking. So much can get lost through the text communication, through that very carefully crafted 15-second soundbite. A lot can be gained too, but at the end of the day, make sure as you're using whatever you're using, that that's just step one to following up and actually talking with the people that you're trying to reach. All right, so we're using arrows here. So Delaware had a success this year, actually one of many, around adding e-cigarettes and vaping to our Clean Indoor Air Act. A little bit of background here. I have no relationships to disclose. Vaping is an emergent phenomenon. California was the first state to ban smoking in enclosed public spaces in 1995. We followed in 2002. The fine print here says that while we banned it, there were a lot of exemptions, private homes, so on and so forth. And additionally, in the state of Delaware, that local governments could go even further in their restrictions. For instance, the city of Bethany, which is a beach town, banned cigarette smoking on the beaches. So we were in pretty good shape for a period of time. 2002, smoking was cigars, tipperillos, cigarettes, hookahs, water pipes, and whatever else instruments you happen to use. But it was the combustibles. So it's not really relevant who created the e-cigarettes. Some people say it happened in America in 63. More conventional wisdom says 2003 was the modern e-cigarette created in China by a gentleman named Han Lick. They were introduced to the Chinese market in 04, European markets in 06, American in 06 and 07. And it's been very well documented, although difficult to track down hard statistics that you can verify, that the use of e-cigarettes and vaping has skyrocketed. Certainly, if you have walked through a shopping mall, you have probably seen the kiosks and been chased around by somebody saying, "Here, you look like you used to smoke. Thank you very much. You need to try this." So the one thing I want to use my pointer for, okay, 2008, we're at about $20 million. 2011, we're at $200 million. This year, estimated $2 billion. Think about what that means in terms of resources redistributed to something that arguably isn't good for us. Now, I don't want to get into the debate of whether or not e-cigarettes are better or worse for you than smoking combustibles. Other people do that debate for us. So one of our arguments on the public health side is we have been here before. And in fact, Big Tobacco, Lorillard, the other big tobacco companies have been buying up the smaller vaping concerns. It still involves nicotine. Nicotine is still addictive. You cannot change that basic premise. We need to understand the opposing point of view, and this is true whether we're talking about childhood vaccinations, safety belt laws, helmet laws, end-of-life instruments that honor our civil rights. We need to understand that there is an opposing point of view. And one of the ways we do this, of course, using social media at its most basic level, is leverage those search engines, the Googles, the Bings, the Yahoos. Find out what's out there just at the top level. You are going to find, in particular, those things that people have paid for high placement, because that's the way, of course, you follow the money. The rankings follow the money. So do consider that. Also consider that when you follow that particular method of logic, you're going to end up with arguably spun information. So this is from the UK, and this is a very interesting thing about why you should stop smoking and start vaping. And they go through carbon monoxide out of your body, you'll feel better, your sense of taste and smell will improve, your lungs will regain their ability to cleanse. Well, all that stuff will happen if you just plain stop smoking, period. So, in any event, the point is, understand the opposing point of view or the view that's different from your own. So part of what we did in Delaware to successfully mount this campaign was we started to use all of our personal and professional networks. And we literally created a list of all of our state legislators, both at the city council levels in Wilmington, in Newark, and Dover. Of course, our state legislators to Dover, and then we focused on our national. And we found out everything we possibly could about what their positions were, not only favorable to our position, but also what their interests might be that would be detrimental to our position. And we looked at everything, and it is amazing how much information we purposely or unintentionally put out into the internet about ourselves. Remembering again, this is about person-to-person communication. It's not just about Oz behind the screen making things happen, although certainly social media allows us to do that. So getting back to the birds, we have a lot of birds flying around. That represents all the different positions out there. They all seem to be flying sort of in the same direction. And we need to distinguish between influencers and advocates. And I made a little list here. This is based on another person's work, but it really resonated with me. So an influencer can be a celebrity, a pundit. You can use Facebook, blog, Twitter. Short attention span. They lack deep compassion and conviction. They're drivers of action. They're the pedal to the metal. They're the gas in the tank. The advocacy that we are looking for has a personal stake. They have a professional stake. They're elected or appointed officials. They're a long-standing ally. They have deep compassion and conviction present, and they are an engine of action. So they can take all the energy from the influencers, and they can then move forward with it. Part of the idea behind doing the campaigns that APHA does so well, get the word out to us so we can contact the appropriate legislators, so we're giving them the gas so that they can hopefully choose to take that engine of change and point it in a good direction. So the other thing I want to point out here is that you've got a whole bunch of white guys, and you have a few gray guys, and I happen to pick out this picture because this guy's looking right at us. Locate your unlikely allies. Our unlikely ally was the Delaware Restaurant Association. Why were they an ally? Because they do not want the people who they represent exposed to secondhand anything. They were amazing in their voice. They also were arguably at a very different position relative to the aisles, and you know what I'm talking about. So this was a wonderful thing, and they advocated in ways that we could not possibly accomplish as a public health group. And so we deeply researched our potential advocates, and again, following the theme of the feather, and we identified a couple of voices aside from our unlikely ally. Now, naturally, those voices happen to be people in the legislature. That's where we're actually trying to affect change. Social media and advocacy, of course, isn't necessarily legislatively oriented. Look at the amazing success of the ALS program last year. That raised awareness of that particular disease like nothing else I could imagine. And we've had, you know, repeat unfortunate incidents where major celebrities, they have a spouse die, or Yul Brynner for those of us old enough to remember who had lung cancer. Those are our pundits. Those can also be our people who really have deep conviction. They've got a personal tie to this. So we identified those people, and there were a couple of legislators down in the state senate in Dover. And we started the process of communicating out to our constituency. There are a lot of different email communication tools out there. Constant Contact happens to be the one that we use. You may be familiar with other ones on that list. I believe that APHA may use Blackbaud, at least in part. A wonderful tool if your organization can afford it. But please understand, whether you are a giant organization like APHA, a relatively small one like the DPHA and the Academy of Medicine, or a one-person shop that's volunteer at that, MailChimp is free. Constant Contact to a level is free. There are lots of utilities out there, and they're not difficult to use. You can do it. If you can already be on a computer, then you probably got the skills to use these. So for the shorter, simpler message, inboxing, posting to Facebook can be very successful. Have a professional page for your organization, unless you are in a position where you're a personal advocate on behalf of something in which case, by all means, do have a personal page as well as your bandstand. Remember, though, grandmother can see everything you post. And if you don't have your security settings put properly, people can also post to your page. So it's a very slippery exposure there. Twitter's an interesting phenomena. You can tweet short videos now, apparently. 140 characters, that little bit of lorem ipsum there below, that's what you've got to work with. We haven't found a lot of success using Twitter, although I know a lot of people swear by it as a great way to communicate. Don't forget about two things. Number one, not everyone speaks English. Not everyone can hear. Not everyone can see. Make sure that you consider your message, consider the community who doesn't have all of the abilities. I was talking with a colleague who I don't believe is here now about the smog index. If you're trying to communicate to the general audience, the lay public, you're going to have to take the communication down, provide the health literacy necessary for them to actually understand what it is that you're talking about on a very basic level. By the way, legislators arguably need a lot of health literacy training as well. Powerful imagery, certainly another thing. Instagram and Pinterest and Imgur and Flickr. Sometimes a picture, you know, is 1,000 words, really is true. For National Public Health Week, we did a photo voice project where, because everyone's got a cell phone now, we said to everyone, okay, I've got a cold, by the way, sorry about this. We said, we're going to do a contest. There's going to be a little Fitbit HR at the end of this. We want you, whoever you are out in the world who gets this communication, to take a picture of what public health is to you. And we got some really, really crazy pictures. We got pictures, surprisingly, of people who identified that sanitation was public health, that the little thing that said water underneath or the sewer grate, of course, cigarette butts, needles. So get people thinking about, and that visual imagery starts a dialogue. Social media can be great for starting a dialogue, although, to a degree, I believe it's a one-way dialogue all too often. So again, make sure you put in a way for people to communicate back to you directly. Pick up the phone so they can call you. The cross-link and share, I think, is fairly obvious. Oh, and by the way, don't forget to have your own website. I've seen a lot of groups now who are going straight to Facebook. And the one disadvantage of going straight to Facebook is that you don't have your name at yourcause.org. And that's very important when you're sending an email out to people. I cringe when I get somebody's name at hotmail.com. I'm just like, really? Oh, you've got to stop using that. While brand advocates would argue otherwise, I think it's a great concept to get specific websites as needed. The Delaware Academy of Medicine and the Delaware Public Health Association run the Immunization Coalition of Delaware, and it has its own website. One of the things we're working on right now in the next legislative session is to remove any exemptions except for medical ones for childhood immunization. You can imagine that we are beginning to ramp up all of our same techniques that we did with e-cigarettes, getting people to understand the science of vaccination, precautionary principle, so that we can have that be a success too, as well. So we've got people flying in the right direction, and we've got our leader, and this was one of our legislators. And I think that might be a he waterfowl, but it was definitely a she, but in any event. One of the things that I always think about in terms of social media is, for heaven's sakes, provide a toolbox, have a consistent message. Make sure that you're linking back to maybe that website that you have of your own that has all the information For heaven's sakes, link to your affiliate. For heaven's sakes, link to the APHA, the world's, the nation's leader in credible information about whatever your topic might be. Update and refresh social media as necessary. It goes without saying, if you don't communicate that way frequently enough, people will kind of forget about you. If you over-communicate, people will tune you out. In particular, regarding email, there's a spam liability. It is real. Your organization's domain can be blacklisted. That's why you use things like MailChimp and Constant Contact that people can opt out of and say, you know what, I heard you, but I don't want to hear from you anymore. Be wary of your opposition, and for heaven's sakes, respect them. There are many very intelligent people who have opposing points of view that we really need to embrace. When you use data, I think I'm preaching to the choir here, but cite it, link back to it if you possibly can. When you borrow ideas, acknowledge the people that you borrowed the idea from. My last slide does that. If you make a predictive statement, be prepared to defend it with science, not just with emotional conviction, although that certainly helps when the chips are down. So here's our little fox in the midst of all of the geese. He's kind of stealthing there. He's pointing in the same direction. But that's that be wary of your internal enemies. You know, people who say, oh, I absolutely agree with you, they could be getting ready to do a knife in the back and a heartbeat. That's where using social media to research the beliefs and the patterns of behavior can become especially important. I might argue that social media is as important for gathering information as it is for disseminating information. When your effort prevails, a couple of things, and that effort can be at any level. You got legislation passed, you moved the needle on a dialogue on the legislative floor. Tell your story. Now really use social media. Get it out on Facebook. Get a LinkedIn account where you can post. I know one of my colleagues in here has LinkedIn, and she posts on that. Thank your allies and your advocates again and again. Give credit to the group. It's nice to say the APHA did this, or the DPHA did this, or I led the charge. But ultimately, with advocacy, it's probably someone else who made the decision, supported by a lot of wind beneath the wings that got them to that point where they could push forward. And remember, the internet has a very long memory. So think about the positions that you take, and especially with that opposing point of view. Do remember that just because you don't agree on this particular issue doesn't mean that an issue down the line you might be in perfect alignment with. We've become, I believe, a nation that says, if I don't agree with you 100%, you're not valid in my book. That doesn't make sense to me. I see by the people shaking their head, it doesn't make a lot of sense to you. We really have to be able to bridge across to alternative points of view. Ultimately, we're all here to empower our community, to be healthier. Generally speaking, that's a cause that just about everyone can ultimately get behind. So, no smoking, no vaping. Any questions? Thank you. Did I anesthetize you? Yes. Five months.
Well, not a very long time, and not overwhelming. I think kind of the reason I asked the question was sometimes things take a year, sometimes things take a couple of weeks, sometimes 3 months. So, just wanted to put it out.
Well, in one of the things In particular, as you go back to your states with e-cigarettes and vaping, you can restart an old dialogue. Remember, back in the 50s and 60s, there were the pictures of the physicians saying cigarette smoking is good for you. Restart the old dialogue. People forget about polio and how far we came. Certainly people seem to be forgetting about the importance of vaccination for children. And we're getting these increasingly worrisome pockets popping up. But paradoxically, in very highly educated parts of the country sometimes, and that totally takes that socioeconomic status view that so many of us hold and flips it on its head and says, just because you have a high level of education doesn't mean that you're smart. I think one of our presidential candidates may really have totally, well, few of them may have really hit that nail on the head. Did I just show my colors? Yes.
When you were working on this, what was the key message that was the most difficult to get over or to, for you to be straightened out?
With vaping, one of the challenging things is that, frankly, it smells good. I mean, if you walk by somebody who's vaping their creme brulee, butterscotch, whatever, and you're going, wow, or your strawberry chocolate, whatever, cigarettes generally to people don't smell good. Vaping is all set up to smell good and to taste good. That's one of its really dangerous components, of course, for kids. So getting people to understand that smoke, which dissipates into the air and leaves a nice smell, is in a sense just as bad as that stuff we used to use back in the 80s, which is we sprayed aerosol all over our homes to make it smell better, only to find downstream, yeah, that does not have a good impact for your lungs. And I did take around at one point a vapor machine, whatever, a vape thing, with different replacement bits. And to people who had never smoked one before, I first said to them, okay, so do you think if you inhaled a cigarette, it's going to hurt your lungs? And of course, they said yes. And I said, so what do you think about vaping? Oh, no, it's just steam. Put on a fresh bit, let them take a toke off of it, and they're like, oh. And they get it. They get it. Please. Okay, let me see whether I can rephrase what you said, make sure I understand. So I think what you're talking about is that for people who are addicted to combustible nicotine, e-cigarettes provide a non-combustible alternative, and the thinking goes they're going to have less damaging effects on the body. Well, frankly, there's something to that, and this is where looking at the opposing point of view can be useful. I do know a number of people through my practice who have in fact stopped smoking combustible cigarettes and ultimately did wean off using e-cigarettes. However, they were very predisposed to deal with this particular addiction problem. It's not like you took somebody who is a pack and a half smoker a day who loved smoking and loved drinking and all the, co-addictive behaviors and, said, well, I'm just going to give you this, and suddenly over the course of a month, they don't want to smoke cigarettes anymore. All we're providing there is a tool like the Nicorette gum or like the patch. So do e-cigarettes have a place for combustible smoking cessation? I think arguably they do. But that doesn't do anything with the precautionary principle at hand, which is we don't want to expose people who don't want to be exposed to the secondhand smoke.
Okay.
That's why if you're going to do this, do it in the privacy of your own home, so to speak. Other questions? Yes. I don't have an opinion on that one way or the other. I mean, do human beings like things that smell and taste good? Yeah. Is that limited to kids? Nah. Are L'Oreal and the big companies targeting children with their tactics? Eh. I don't know. In the back. Oh, yeah.
So when that happens, how do you keep control of your message?
Well, one of the things that we did do a little trial run on was to actively engage in the opposing point of view dialogue, and we did that through TAN meetings. Now, that granted is a face-to-face interaction, and again, I'm all on the face-to-face interactions. If we defer to the internet, disaster ultimately is the downstream impact, I think. But we did do a limited, opposing points of view. We did the town hall, and then we did a whole, this is what different people were saying, and took the next step to tell sort of our rebuttal story. But you're right, messages can totally get out of hand. The message that I just made, that in some instances, e-cigarettes might be a good thing for smoking cessation, could definitely get out of hand if it's not in the context of the larger dialogue. One thing about e-cigarettes, by the way, they're not involving matches. They're not hot that way. We do believe we may be seeing a decrease in the number of household fires related to, the smoking. But again, precautionary principle, that doesn't say you should go out and pick up vaping. But in any event, other questions? Yes?
Recently I read there was a thing on the news about one blowing up in a guy's face.
Oh, yeah.
And now he's, at the pump and all that. Was that ever an issue before?
They certainly have failed, but I would say in the same context, iPhones have blown up, laptops have blown up. It's got a lithium battery in it. It can go bad. I don't know whether that particular thing has happened before. Again, I will say a lot more people have died in their beds from their mattress catching on fire. Yes. Oh, right. Oh, okay. Right. Well, I agree with you. Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's a great debate going on in the UK right now. Actually, that one slide of the very healthy-looking guy who clearly has taken up vaping instead of cigarette smoking, and he's got muscles just bulging all over the place. There's a very vigorous dialogue about it. And because there's not at this point an international consensus from, say, the World Health Organization, at least that I am aware of, about e-cigarettes and vaping, individual countries are going to have to get to their own culturally, nationally appropriate acceptance point. I think we're done. Thank you.